Migrants' rights advocates started the week terrified that Republicans would try to ram through an attempt to enshrine a ban on sanctuary cities in the state constitution ahead of a presidential rally. Instead, less than 24 hours after President Donald Trump left Phoenix, the measure was dead. What happened? What does this mean for immigration policy in the state? And what does the attempt mean for the legacy of Doug Ducey, who spent much of his time as governor trying to get Arizona out from under the shadow of SB 1070? We'll get into all that this week on The Breakdown. Welcome back to The Breakdown, podcast listeners. I'm Julia Shumway, Senate reporter at the Arizona Capital Times, joined in studio this week by all three of my colleagues, House reporter Aaron Kimball-Sanit, Governor's Office reporter Andrew Nikla, Courts and Education reporter Dylan Rosenblatt. And this week, all four of us contributed quite a bit to a couple stories, including a story that does not exist unless you're a print subscriber, about what Governor Doug Ducey, Representative TJ Shope, and other Republicans in the House and Senate were trying to do with a ban on sanctuary cities. The week got off to a really intense start when a bill that wasn't even the sanctuary city bill came up for debate in the House Elections Committee. Aaron Kimball-Sanit was paying attention to that, and he'll explain for us just what happened in the House Elections Committee.
Yeah, so this week was off to, I would say, a contentious start, kind of from the get-go. We had a House Elections Committee hearing on Tuesday, in which lawmakers from each party kind of pitted themselves against each other. Activists from Living United for Change in Arizona, a immigrants' rights advocacy organization, were involved once again. They had previously been involved in a dust-up in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing the previous week. At the core of the conflict was a series of bills that would take aim at the state's ballot initiative system and other voting issues, including one that opponents felt would unfairly target immigrants and people of Latin American descent. One person who was testifying, Randy Perez of Lucha, connected one of the referrals that was being heard to rhetoric from President Donald Trump, who has repeatedly made largely unfounded claims of voter fraud by undocumented immigrants. Representative Townsend, Kelly Townsend, who chairs the Elections Committee, had set several ground rules at the beginning of the hearing, basically trying to avoid what happened in the Senate Judiciary. One of those rules was don't call anything racist, which Perez didn't do, but nonetheless, she still took issue with his repeated references of Trump. Basically, from that point, without having to do a detailed play-by-play, things really spiraled out of control. Members were impugning each other. Representative Warren Peterson said that the real reason that things were getting out of hand is because of, in addressing Randy Perez, you and others like you who are disrespectful of the process, which some Democrats took as a racist comment. Warren Peterson obviously is white. Many of these activists are not. And that really did kind of just set the tone, I would say, for the rest of the week.
And while this all happened Tuesday after most people had gone home, maybe I think Dylan, our colleague, was eating dinner when this happened, which was a lesson we all learned this week. You just can't eat meals or look away from what's happening at the legislature. It all continued on Wednesday on the House floor. What happened on Wednesday?
At one point during the floor session on Wednesday, Democrats kind of en masse, beginning with Representative Athena Salmon, who's one of the Democrats on the House Elections Committee, invoked a House rule called Rule 20, which basically allows you to enter content into the register under the premise of it being a protest. Generally speaking, on the floor, you can't just say whatever you want at any given time. It has to kind of fit a given format, but this gives you a significant amount of leeway. And she used the opportunity to read testimony from activists who were unable to deliver testimony after hours and hours of waiting during the Elections Committee because Townsend closed the committee to public testimony after the conflict broke out. From that point on, other Democrats invoked Rule 20 in essence to air their grievances about how the committee hearing was handled, about how they've been treated by the majority. And then Republicans basically tried to set the record straight from their perspective, and again, invoking Rule 20. Representative Townsend announced that she would file a pair of ethics complaints, which has become something of a theme in this session, One against Salmon for essentially talking over her during the committee, and another against Representative Diego Rodriguez from Phoenix, who's a Democrat, who left the committee during a vote, basically under protest, because he, as he told the committee members, didn't want to legitimize what he felt was a process that was discriminatory and spiraling out of control. And that sort of back and forth just went on and on and on for a long time, and then eventually we got back to business.
And I think if we were to keep a running list of lawmakers who have had ethics complaints filed against them for actions tangentially related, in some cases, to some of the sanctuary city rhetoric that's been going around, we have, obviously, Representative Salmon, Representative Rodriguez. I believe Representative Salmon just, as we're recording this, filed another complaint against Representative Townsend.
Yeah, that is the, well, I don't want to call that the news of the day because we'll get to that in a minute, but that is one minor artifact of the news of the day. Salmon, literally minutes ago, it's now Friday afternoon, filed an ethics complaint with House Ethics Chair T.J. Shope, who was a Republican from Coolidge, alleging basically that Townsend violated all sorts of different House rules by not yielding to a roll call vote that Salmon requested, not allowing her to speak, by not stopping other members from impugning Salmon, even though Kelly Townsend at the outset of the hearing made very clear that she wouldn't tolerate such behavior. Apparently she would, as long as it was coming from members of her own party, Salmon would allege. And as well as allowing Representative Shauna Bullock to live stream the whole thing. It is, yeah, basically just another development in this saga. For what it's worth, I don't really think that any of this is worth reading into all that much. Rodriguez on the floor basically said, like, screw it, file an ethics complaint. I'm not really going to comment. And T.J. Shope said that the extent of any investigation or hearings that he would hold would basically just amount to him telling the various players involved on both sides of the aisle to, quote, read the damn rule book.
And that's, and over on the Senate side, we have an ethics complaint of our own filed against Senator Eddie Farnsworth by members of Living United for Change in Arizona, who alleged that he violated Senate rules and not allowing them to speak after his committee a couple weeks ago just devolved into chaos. But while all of this possible impugning and debate on the House floor and ethics complaints coming from every which direction was happening on Wednesday, Republicans in the House and Senate were also getting ready to head over to Veterans Memorial Coliseum to meet President Donald Trump. Andrew, I know you were at Veterans Memorial Coliseum to see the president's speech and caught up with some people there. What was the atmosphere like, and what did President Trump have to say about sanctuary cities in Arizona?
Yeah, so I was there at the Coliseum. I left a bit late, tried to get in, was told that media check-in was 4:30, missed the deadline, and was told that, so hung out with some protesters instead. There were some people from Lucha, from Puente, and from a handful of other immigrant advocacy organizations, a couple hundred people, you know, like you could find them on any given street. I was on the north entrance to the fairground where we thought the president was going to enter through. And people there were, like this was like any other protest you've been to, waving and chanting signs and like demanding change, like demanding that the president and Governor Ducey, acknowledge these immigrants as they were basically just demanding that they back off of what they saw as hardline immigration policies. But inside the stadium, about halfway through his speech, the president invited the congressional delegation up there along with, Governor Ducey. And he said that thankfully Arizona has already banned sanctuary cities. And that was kind of odd to hear, but we already knew that was the case. And, part of that argument was actually why the Ninth Floor, like, eventually, nixed this proposal.
Right. So we have been kind of dancing around this for the start of the show, but we don't have a sanctuary city, we don't have a sanctuary city ballot referral. It's dead. And as of Wednesday night, it was still seemed to be alive. What exactly happened over the course of the day on Thursday?
So at the beginning of the day, or actually like about midday, the governor was at some unrelated event for charter schools, and he had a little gaggle afterwards. It was a couple other reporters. The only thing we wanted to talk to him about was this sanctuary city bill that he was, again, at the time, very much pushing for. It was something that he had brought up in his State of the State address, and something that was a high priority for him, something he was championing with Shope. And he became visibly irritated with us when we just would not get off of that subject. He kept saying that the reputation Arizona's reputation, its economy, and its trade relationship with Mexico have never been better, and that any comparison between 1070 and what he was asking for was simply, like, anyone making that comparison was living in the past. And what happened was they eventually caved into that public pressure, realized they had no votes. Mostly was the reason they had no votes, or they were missing at least one vote in the House. And they felt it was, you know, like a better move to just not continue and waste their energy.
So the governor, as you said, was very opposed to any comparison between this and Senate Bill 1070. But also the reason we have a ban on sanctuary cities that President Trump was able to praise Arizona for is because of SB 1070. Did Governor Ducey acknowledge that at all?
No. And we asked him about that, and he just would fall back on the same line. This is about, you know, giving the people the choice to, you know, enshrine this in the Constitution. This was something that was, you know, rejected in Tucson, and we want all of Arizona to vote on this. This is about not bringing California policies to Arizona. He wouldn't acknowledge that comparison. And additionally, on Friday morning, when I talked with his chief of staff, Daniel Scarpinato, he said they had 95% to 98% of what they wanted, and this proposal was just to, you know, get to 100%.
I think Andrew brings up a really good point, and that's one of the things that's really stuck out to me about this whole process, which is that Republicans pushing the ballot referral, Representative DJ Shope mostly, as well as Ducey and his staff, have kind of insisted the whole time that this is a necessary but largely technical change to existing policy. It would have the benefit of enshrining a portion of SB 1070, which of course is something that Democrats would want to alter if they were to take power, in the Constitution, and thus protecting it from further meddling by the legislature. But yeah, they were basically just saying that this isn't something that would have a ton of practical change, which progressives would kind of argue, well, why are you pushing this if you don't actually expect it to do anything? And I think that also kind of explains why Democrats were quick to frame this as the revival of SB 1070, despite Ducey's insistence that any comparison would be living in the past, or however you put it.
And as Andrew referred to earlier, one of the main reasons why Governor Ducey appeared to have pulled this measure, why Representative Shope didn't want to push it anymore, was because of some news that you broke in the Arizona Legislative Report around 3 p.m. on Thursday. Can you describe for our listeners, in case they're not regular readers of the Legislative Report, even though they really should be, just what the news was?
I want to precede this by saying that I think that Ducey Chief of Staff Daniel Scarpinato is a very fast runner. Because at around 3 p.m. on Thursday, the Legislative Report came out. In that report, we had an item resulting from a conversation I had with Representative Tony Rivero, who is a Republican from Peoria. He is a really interesting guy because he is sort of the champion of the state's trading relationship with Mexico. He is the reason that we have trade offices down there. He frequently leads delegations. And he is not nearly as hawkish on immigration as some of his Republican colleagues are. And I had a feeling that he might have something interesting to say about the ballot referral. So I pulled him aside in a conference room and talked to him. And he basically said that he thinks that if the referral were to pass, and actually even if it didn't pass, just talking about it, could have a long-term negative impact on the state's relationship with Mexico. And as such, he probably wouldn't be voting for the referral in the House unless it was packaged with a broad slate of immigration reforms, including a bill that he is sponsoring that would legalize consular IDs, something that happened, something that were made illegal shortly after SB 1070, as well as a bill to extend in-state tuition to DACA recipients. And we printed that in Ledge Report. 5 or 6 minutes later, I saw Daniel Scarpinato in the Capitol outside of the chamber, along with Katie Fisher, who is the governor's lobbyist in the legislature. They met Shope outside of the chamber, and then they immediately kind of scurried away without really explaining what they were doing there, despite my insistent questioning. And I would find out, I guess on Friday, after talking to Shope, that apparently, at least according to his version of events, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. There were longstanding concerns about whether there would be enough votes in the Senate. There's, you know, a couple moderates there whose seats are being targeted by Democrats in the form of Kay Brophy McGee and Heather Carter. But this was the real first indication that there was someone in the House who might be voting no.
And it was pretty obvious. I mean, even in my chamber on Thursday, while Representative Shope was meeting with Daniel Scarpinato over in the House, we had Senate President Fan just kind of sequestered in her office, bringing in various people to meet with her. And our initial reaction was, oh no, are these people going to drop a budget on us today? But it turns out we've earned a little bit of a reprieve on a budget. Expect that in the next couple weeks. And outside of Democrats who are opposing this bill, Representative Rivero potentially, although none of them want to commit to this and they don't really have to because the bill's done without them commenting on it, some more moderate Republicans in the Senate, who was pressuring Governor Ducey to kill this referral and not send it to the ballot in November?
There was really a confluence of groups. On one hand, you had business interests, especially those connected with the state's Hispanic population. I mean, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce was, you know, fairly early in saying that this would be a really bad idea. Glenn Hammer, who has the Arizona Chamber of Commerce, did not really stake out an official position, but told another reporter that, you know, there were a lot of people he respected who didn't like this and kind of asked us to read between the lines on that. We also heard from Democrats that they were under the impression that Greater Phoenix leadership and the Greater Phoenix Economic Council to business groups in the city were pressuring Ducey to not do anything about this. And I think a lot of people have really bad memories about boycotts and subsequent economic harm to the state that occurred in the fallout of SB 1070. And I mean, that was really one of the things that was most powerful in swaying public opinion on that legislation. And I think that, you know, we can't count them out in addition to the, you know, bevy of activist groups, Democratic lawmakers, and a couple moderates who all seem to be kind of lining up to chip away at this. So an important subtext, I guess, of this is the idea that this is like an election year ploy. That's something we've heard from a lot of people. It's been a criticism from Democrats. This is like, you know, craven, cynical politics. What do voters actually think about these kinds of policies? Like, would this work as an election ploy?
So I talked to a couple strategists and consultants this morning about because our reading of this when Governor Ducey first announced it was that this was an attempt to really rile up the Republican base, make sure they turn out in November. And George Kaloff, a Republican pollster, told me that honestly, Republicans are enthusiastic already. This kind of thing on the ballot would not make that big of a difference, and it's probably better that the governor pulled it as opposed to risking Democrats getting fired up and going out and voting against immigration. Paul Bentz, another GOP consultant, mentioned that it seems like it's something where the governor probably wasn't expecting the kind of reaction he would get from this. And Andrew, has that been your sense from the governor's office? Were they not prepared for this kind of reaction?
So they didn't say that outright, of course, but you know, given how cautious and calculated that this office usually is, through their, you know, answering of that, they didn't really see it coming. And they spend it more as this was an example of the governor listening to people. You know, he heard that condemnation. He heard the criticism from the business community, from activists, from members of the legislature who either were not, you know, expected to vote for this. And so he listened to them by polling this.
And when it comes to the governor, he has spent most of his time in office trying to get Arizona out from under the shadow of that national reputation it acquired when it passed SB 1070 10 years ago. What does championing this measure, even if it's ultimately not going anywhere, mean for Governor Ducey's legacy?
So in the end, this was just an example of the business governor who is trying to lean into Trump and his policies, eventually listening to business and like listening to like the conscience of his staff. I mean, like his chief of staff pointed out that he could have, if he wanted to, you know, strong arm this through, get what he wanted, you know, have the legislature voted through, put it on the ballot, and like according to them, it would have passed overwhelmingly. But that would have taken away from their larger, very ambitious agenda. So they just felt it wasn't worth it and sort of admitted to themselves that it maybe didn't really mean much because they already had most of what they wanted.
And that'll do it for this week. Thank you to Andrew Nikla, Aaron Kimball-Sanit, and Dylan Rosenblatt for joining me to talk about sanctuary cities, a subject that we probably won't have to bring up again, at least until next year. You can continue to read all of our reporting, not just about this issue, but about everything happening at the legislature, in the executive tower, and everything else happening around 1700 Washington Street in the Arizona Legislative Report, in the Yellow Shoe Report, and in the Arizona Capital Times, online at azcapitaltimes.com. That's it for us this week, but we look forward to talking to you again next week.